And we're holding on page 18 in Bava Kamma, the bottom of the page, last paragraph, middle of Oiskol Gimel. We started learning last time about the Mishnah had said that you're not allowed to raise small cats, small livestock, which is to say sheep and goats, in Eretz Yisrael, because, you know, you have, like, in this week's parasha, Avram and Lot with Lot's animals grazing in other people's fields. So you're allowed to, there are certain areas in Eretz Yisrael where you could raise them because those are basically grazing areas. The Gemara discusses you can raise them in Sahir. The Mishnah had mentioned Syria, which are the areas that David conquered before he had fully conquered Eretz Yisrael. We're not so worried about the damage to the crops there, and also in the deserts, which is to say, like the steppes or the prairies in Eretz Yisrael, the areas that are grasslands, like. So nobody is using those for farmland anyhow, so there's no problem. The Gemara mentions also in that connection that you can raise them in forests for the same reason. For the korbanos, you have to have a place where you can raise them. The truth is, maybe not, actually. The Mishnah, actually, in Menachos, when it describes where they would get the best quality animals for the various korbanos, it mentions, so it does mention, actually, kvasim mechevron. It's true. It does mention that baby sheep would come from chevron, but elim, rams, for example, it says the best ones actually came from moyov. And similarly with some of the other types. But in any case, yeah, you can raise them. I mean, you have certain limitations. Mishnah and the Gemara describe, you know, a certain amount of time before Yom Tov, for example, you can raise them because, yeah, you're going to need them for korbanos, things like that. But on the whole, you can't. So the Gemara mentions it. So the Gemara says in this connection, Omer Bishmol, mi balik batim shebegolol ha'oyin hoyu beis abba. My father's family were among the balabatim in the upper Galil. So you have the Golil, the north of Eretz Yisrael, has the lower part, which is closer to the Kinneret, that includes places like Tveria and whatnot, the lowlands, and then you have the higher parts, which includes Tzfas and Meron and all the mountainous areas over there. So my ancestors, says Rabbi Shmuel, were among the Balabatim in that area. Why was that area destroyed and desolated by the Pashtus when the Romans conquered it? So you marin b'choshim, there were two problems. So you marin b'choshim, number one, they were grazing their small livestock in the choshim, in the forest. Now we just said that what's the problem? Forests are fine. He's going to explain in a second. The donin dinim mominus b'yochid. And the other thing was they would judge dinim mominus alone. Now a yochid mumcha who has Smicha Ishmi Piish is able to judge Dini Mominus alone. Nevertheless, as it says in Pirkei Avos, Al Tehi Don Yechidi Shan Don Yechidi Ale Echad. Better not to do that. The only one who can really judge alone is Hashem. So therefore, so Rabbi Shmuel says, because of that, their area of Eretz Yisrael ended up getting devastated. Now, V'Achapi Shohelam Choshim Samoch Levatehem. Now, these forests were near their houses. So now the forests in and of themselves are not a problem. The Gemara had mentioned before, it's not here in Ein Yaakov, but it was the Gemara had mentioned it before, and later on, when we start learning about the Takonis of Rabbi Yeshua, the Takonis of Yeshua, not Rabbi Yeshua, of Yeshua ben Nun, then we're going to have one of them, is that people can graze their animals in the forests. So and it was near their fields, so they're near their houses, so they're not grazing in other people's fields. What's the problem? The answer is Sodik Tanahoisa. There was a little field in between their house and the forest, and they're bringing their animals through there. So therefore, there's still the concern that their animals are grazing in those fields on the way. There is, in fact, that's according to Rashi learns that Shalachirim Hoisa, that field belonged to somebody else, so that was the problem. The Ravid goes even further. He says it wasn't even necessarily somebody else's field. It may have been their own field. But nevertheless, you still, the Chachamim said, you can't raise the Hemadaka, the Eretz Yisrael, and that includes to have it graze in fields, b'chlal, and therefore even though they're bringing it through their own field, that's still being over on this Takana of the Chachamim. So the Gemara goes on, Kashem Sha'amru Ein Gablin Behemadaka, just as the Chachamim said, you can't raise small livestock in Eretz Yisrael, Kach Amru Ein Gablin Chayadaka. So also you can't raise small wild animals. Rashi says, for example, deer or foxes. For much the same reason, because they're going to graze and they're going to destroy the vegetation, the crops. Rabbi Shmuel says, Basically, that's true, but there are some exceptions. In the Gadlin Kloven Kufrin, you are allowed to raise in Eretz Yisrael Kufri dogs. Now, the Mishnah had said you're not allowed to have a dog unless it's tied up with a chain. But here, Rabbi Shmuel is saying there's a type of dog, and the reason was because their barking frightens people, in particular, the Gemara mentions later on, it can frighten a pregnant woman and cause her to miscarry. But Rabbi Shmuel says Kloven Kufrim is not a problem. Now, what are kufrim? Rashi says two explanations. One is that it means little short dogs, so like poodles or something like that. The other explanation says faker. Rashi says it means large hunting dogs, like I guess in that case it would be like, I don't know, like St. Bernards or something. The point is, neither of those kinds are prone to cause harm and to damage, or they're barking to frighten people or whatever. So therefore, Rabbi Shmuel says there's no problem raising those. V'chasulim, you can also raise cats. The koifin and monkeys, the choldos snoyim, the Gemara is going to define in the next couple of lines what it is. Literally, choldos means weasels, and snoyim means bushes. So there's some type of weasel-like creature that lives in the bushes, as the Gemara will explain in a second. Mipnei shasuyim l'nakar es habayis, the reason is because such creatures help keep the house clean. They catch mice. And they catch mice, and that way, you have cats, for example, and these other creatures, then they'll catch and kill the mice, and that way your house is not infested. Now,
they say no letter raise, it means a lot of them, or a person's allowed to have his own little dog.
So we're talking. So the Mishnah had said of that person lo yigadol sakelav elin ken ho yakosher b'shalshelas. So a person is not allowed to raise a dog of the type that's likely to be that are prone to be dangerous, or at least that their bark might frighten people unless it's tied up with a chain. So here Rabbi Shmuel is saying there are certain breeds of dogs that there's not a problem with that. But then
a cat or a weasel. People didn't raise foxes.
Apparently, sometimes people.
Commercial.
No, not necessarily. No, the Pashas were talking even individually. Yeah, you wouldn't think of when we're saying the Nakar Sabais, for example. You don't have a whole herd of cats in your house to deal with the mice. You have one cat, and then
it's raising cats.
No, but that's not what we mean. Ein Megadlin Ve Madaka means even individually. Yeah. Now not all of these creatures catch mice. Cats, yeah. Choldos snoyim, as we'll define in a second, maybe. But for example, monkeys certainly don't catch monkeys. The pashtos don't catch mice. So Yad Yosef on the side brings over here. Maybe the word is not supposed to be the koifin, but rather the kupodin, which would mean hedgehogs. Now we'll talk about in a second one possible explanation of choldos snoyim is in fact hedgehogs. So as there were porcupines or similar creatures like that, those do eat rodents. So in that case, then it might mean that instead of koifin. On the other hand, the Meiri says, listen, all it is we're saying any Rabbi Shmuel was saying any kind of creature which is not prone to be dangerous is not a problem. Some of them are lemnachas abayis. Some of them help keep your house clear of rodents, and others of them like monkeys, they're harmless creatures. They don't help keep your house clean. But they also are not prone to attack people or to cause any kind of damage. So that's the thing. So in Eretz Yisrael, we're talking in the time when most of Eretz Yisrael was in Jewish hands. The problem was if you were growing behemoth daka in Eretz Yisrael, there was a high likelihood that it would end up grazing in somebody else's field, and that somebody else would be a yid. So now, in fact, in later times, when Eretz Yisrael ended up over time, over the centuries, in the hands of the Goyim, so the poskim write that din does not really apply anymore. Does it apply nowadays when Baruch Hashem Eretz Yisrael is in many places is heavily populated with Jews? You actually have a machlokas among the Achronei Poskim on that question. Do we say once the Gzeira has gone out of effect, then we can't put it back into effect? Or do we say that no, you know, the reason behind it was because most of the fields are owned by Jews? So in that case, if you're in an area where most of the fields are owned by Jews, then the same dinim would apply again. So it's a machlokas among the Achronei Poskim as far as that. Well, in Chutz La'aretz, it doesn't apply. In Chutz La'aretz, Rashi says even when we said in the Mishnah, even Surya, so Surya for this purpose is considered like Chutz La'aretz. In Chutz La'aretz, Gesunta Hech, go ahead and raise your small livestock. We're not so worried about the ecology over there, about how it's going to damage the crops. If it happens that it causes damage, then of course you pay, but you don't have to proactively not raise them because of that. Okay. So my choldos snoyim, we said one of the ones on the list that you're allowed to raise is choldos snoyim. So what are those? Omer Rav Yehuda, shirtza chautza. It's a small scurrying creature called chautza. The Ikudami chauzo would mean a stinging creature, something like a porcupine, diktini shoki, which has small legs, the raya bene vaudini, and it grazes and it eats among the bushes. So that's why it's called a chodos snoyim, because it feeds among the bushes. Well, my shoutza, why do we call it shoutza? Maloshin sheres, the mitatoi shake, because its legs are short. Rashi in Chumash, in a number of places, explains that the word sheretz b'chlal means creatures that either don't have legs at all, or that they have short legs so that you don't really see the legs as the creature is moving around, so it looks like it's just slithering along, kind of. So therefore, this creature, and there are different explanations among the Mefoshim, it may mean a squirrel, it may mean a hedgehog or a porcupine, it may mean a creature called a marten. Whatever, all of those have this in common. They do have short legs, and they run around a lot. Tosfos brings an explanation that shirtza chartza, the word chartza, would mean meloshin choritz, meloshin a grove. That it's according to the way we understand it in the Gemara on the face of it, the Gemara is just giving different ways of saying the same thing. That it has shirtza chartza, it's a sheretz called chartza or chartza, and it has short legs. Tosfos says the Gemara is actually giving two different explanations. One is that it's a creature that has long, skinny legs. Therefore, you can see very clearly when you look at the legs of it, you can see the grooves in its legs, like where the bones attach together at the joints. Therefore, according to that explanation, it's not considered a sheretz. But the fact is, it's called chodos snoyim, and we know that one of the shemona shirotzim listed in the Torah is hacholed. So the question is it the same thing? Is it still in the category of sheretz, or maybe not, since it has long, noticeable legs? Then the second explanation of the Gemara is that in fact it has short legs, and therefore it is in fact identical with the cholad of the Torah, and it is in the category of sheretz. You have to keep in mind, by the way, when the Torah classifies creatures, basically it classifies them in different categories depending on how they move. If they're in the water, then as far as halacha is concerned, they're in the category of fish, even if they're mammals like whales or whatever. If they fly, they're in the category of birds. Even, for example, you have in the list of non-kosher birds, you have the atalef, which is a bat. And according to Rashi, a kinshemes over there, also in the list, is also a type of bat. Bats are not birds, they're mammals, but they fly, so as far as the Torah is concerned, they're in the category of oif. The same thing over here. When you have creatures that have short legs or no legs, then they're in a category of their own called sheretz. So according to Tosfos, the Gemara is bringing two possibilities over here. One is a creature that has long, noticeable legs, but because it shares a name with the cholot of the Torah, maybe after all it is called a sheretz. Maybe it is a subspecies of that, and therefore it's a sheretz. And the second explanation is that it's in fact a creature that has short legs and definitely therefore is in the category of sheretz. Right, like the cholot, right. What is the cholot of the Torah, by the way, is not so simple either. B'chlal, to translate a lot of the creatures that we have in the Torah is not so simple. There's a lot of different opinions. There are various possibilities over there. It may be a mole or another creature that shares a somewhat similar name but is actually different, called a mole rat. Or it may attack be a rat, or there's different part, or a marten, or different other ones. Eitz Yosef brings over here another possible explanation. Brings from the Aruch that it's a type of weasel that has a very soft, expensive fur. You have on royal robes, you sometimes see, back in the day, you would sometimes see, like, they'd have a lining made out of ermine fur, where an ermine is a type of weasel that has a very soft, fancy looking coat, and they would use that for fancy royal robes, and then fur coats and things like that. So that's another possibility of what the chodos hasnoyim is over here. The Gemara goes on, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Osinu Atzmenu B'Bavel Ke'Eretz Yisrael L'Behema Daka. We have made ourselves in Bavel like Eretz Yisrael as far as this rule of not raising small livestock. So the same rules that the Mishnah had said, you can't raise them in Eretz Yisrael, only under certain limited conditions. So Rav Yehuda says, in the name of Rav, we in Bavel do the same thing. Rashi explains that what it means is that when Rav came to Eretz Yisrael, Rav was born in Bavel. He grew up in Bavel. Then he moved to Eretz Yisrael and was there for many years as one of Rebbe's senior Talmidim. Then when he was old, he moved back to Bavel and revitalized it as a place of Torah. The Gemara mentions in Poland, for example, a story where Rav at one point came to a certain village over there, and he overheard one balabasta saying to the other one, this recipe for meat, how much milk do we need for this recipe? So he realized, I don't even know basta b'chalav. So he worked on upgrading the standard of Yiddishkeit in that whole area. So now Rashi explains that when he came there, one of the takonis he made, realizing that now you have a significant number of Jews in Babel, significant Kehillah over there, and in fact that the center of Jewish life is really starting to move from Eretz Yisrael to there, so he said that the same dinim have to apply over there. Tosfos learns differently, that rather what it means is when Rav came there, he said all along, he reminded them that all along, ever since the times of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, during Golus Babel, when the entire Jewish people, or most of them, were in Babel, then this din has applied. You may have forgotten it over the centuries, but this din has always applied. It's not a new takana that I'm making now. In any case, so yes, the same rule applies in Babel. So now, Rav Adaba Ava asked Rav Huna, you're living in Babel, so we're not allowed to raise small livestock, but you have sheep and goats. Didochmai, what about yours? How are you raising such animals here in Babel when Rav is saying we can't? Omalei, so Rav Huna says, Didan kominter lehu choiva. Choiva, which is Rav Huna's wife, is watching them. So therefore, in other words, I can trust her that she's making sure they don't graze in other people's fields, etc. Omalei, sort of Adaba Ava, gives him a sharp answer, Choiva tikberinu livna. So Rashi explains it's more like a rhetorical question. Does Choiva want to bury her children? In other words, she's being over, you and she are being over on a takana of the Chachamim to not raise such animals in Eretz Yisrael. So how could you do such a thing? What? In Babel, yeah. So actually, you know, Rashi doesn't address it, but Tosfos addresses it. First, that it brings from Rabbeinu Hananel that it's a question one explanation is he's making it a statement as a klala. You and she are being over on a takana of the Chachamim, and therefore you deserve to have this kind of punishment. Yon Yaakov explains kind of midah keneged midah. You're not allowed to raise the Hema Daka because Yishuv Aretz, because you want to be careful about that the land should stay settled and it shouldn't become desolate. You're being over on it, Rav Adaba Ava, you and your wife are being over on that, Rav Adaba Ava says to Rav Huna, so therefore you deserve, so to speak, that you're not going to have, that your family is going to continue to exist. Is going to continue to grow and flourish, just like you're not allowed, you're just like you're preventing the fields from growing and flourishing. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hananel that it's more of a rhetorical question. What is she planning to bury her children? If she's so busy taking care of the animals, how does she have time to also take care of your kids? Well, it was, as the Gemara often says, kishgoga shiyotzam lefnei ashalit, whether he said it as an actual klala, whether he said it as a rhetorical question, either way, we often find that when a tzaddik says something, then that has an effect, even if he says it inadvertently. The result was kulashnei, that Rav Adaba Ava, throughout all the rest of Rav Adaba Ava's life, lo yikayim zara lo Rav Huna mechoiva. Rav Huna did not have any children from choiva who stayed alive. Maybe he had other wives and he had children from them, but we do find in the Gemara in a number of places we have Rav Abba Rav Huna, so maybe that was a son of Rav Huna from a different wife. But choiva, which is whom he's talking about over here, because of what Rav Adaba Ava said, none of her children stayed alive as long as Rav Adaba Ava was alive. Both Tosfos and Marashah mention there's a different Gemara in Nazir that also mentions such a conversation between Rav Adaba Ava and Rav Huna. There the subject was about shaving Rav Huna's kids' heads. So you can't shave off the payas, and the Gemara discusses over there about that a child, of course, is not chayev in mitzvahs, but nevertheless, the adults around them are chayev to make sure they do them. It's at chinuch. The Gemara discusses over there, does the issue of shaving the payas apply? It doesn't apply to a woman for herself, because the mitzvah of hakafas harosh applies only to men, but does it apply that a woman is not allowed to shave a boy's head? So the Gemara mentions a similar point in Nazir and says a similar thing, that Rav Huna's children had their heads completely shaved, payas and all, and Rav Adaba Ava asks who's doing that, and he says choiva, and he says the same thing as he says over here. So Marsha points...
This is not Faber's responsibility. Why isn't it his also?
The fascist...
had more wives, you're saying. So he lived there and he had more wives.
Maybe. I'm saying I don't know for sure that he had more wives. I'm just speculating, given that we do find a son of Rav Huna, Rabbi Rav Huna, who was a god of Atorah not long after his father passed away. So unless Rav Ada Baba had passed away much earlier and there was enough time for Rav Huna and there was enough time for Rabbi Rav Huna to be born and to grow up, I don't know. But in any case, here he's saying that Choivo is watching them. Apparently she's responsible. Apparently the Vorto. First of all, you do have the expression. First of all, you have the expression "lav achra ganva el chora ganva." You know, it's not the mouse that's the thief; it's the hole. Meaning, in other words, if Rav Huna didn't have Choiva willing to take on the responsibility of taking care of these animals, the less brer he'd have to sell them or something. So the fact that she's
trying to prevent doing a mitzvah.
Apparently, Rav Ada Baba didn't see it that. Apparently, Rav Ada Baba didn't see it that way. But In any case, Marsha points out that it really required both. That just because the klala wouldn't have been just because of the story with the payas over there, because actually Rav Ada Baava himself said, the Gemara explains over there, he says that even when he asks Rav Huna, who's shaving your kids' heads, and Rav Huna tells him Choiva, the Gemara explains over there, Rav Ada Baava himself holds, it is perfectly mutter for a woman to shave a boy's payas. Rav Huna is the one who holds that not, so Rav Ada Baava tells him in that case, then how comes it that your kids have shaved payas? So in that case, then Rav Ada Baava himself, Lashitose, would say that there's no problem with it. So even though he says such a sharp expression over there, Marsha explained, that alone would not have been reason enough to have such a devastating effect on Rav Huna's children if it weren't for this story over here as well, where he also expressed himself in the same way. All right, speaking of, the Gemara had gone on, had mentioned that we said before in the Braisa that you are allowed, that Rabbi Shmuel said you are allowed to raise cats. So now let's talk about that a little bit. The Gemara tells us that the background is the following story. Rav Shmuel v'Rav Asi iklu l'beis Shavua ha-ben. Rav and Shmuel and Rav Asi one time visited a Shavua, where one time came to participate in a Shavua ha-ben, which would be a bris, which takes place when the baby is a week old. This, by the way, this Rav Asi in the story over here is not, you often have in Shas, Reb Ami and Reb Asi, the Talmidim of Reb Yechanan, these aren't the ones. Here we're talking about Rav Asi, who's mentioned, he's mentioned in a number of places in Shas. He was, as we see in this story, he was a chaver of Rav and Shmuel. And in fact, it comes out from the story over here, he was a Talmud of Rav, but he was greater even than Shmuel. That's the next one, Yeshua Ben. Rashi says, Shavua Ben is Bris Mila, Al-Shem Sha'overall of Zayin Yomim. But Amri lo lebe Yeshua ben. Others say that it wasn't a bris, they came to a Yeshua ben. Rashi translates Yeshua ben as a pidyon ben, because Yeshua means saving and pidyon also means saving. So therefore they nicknamed it that. Tosfos doesn't. Tosfos and discusses, it's not here in Ein Yaakov, but it's not a pidyon ben, it's rather Yeshua ben would be either what we call the Vachnacht or what we call the Shalom Zachar. And it would be called Yeshua, Meloshan, that the baby has been saved, the baby has been like pulled out and schlepped out from his mother's womb, and you have a celebration in honor of that. So Tosfos discusses that it can't mean a pidyon ben, and they talk about that it may mean that it may mean a suda in honor of the baby's birth. The Trumas Hadeshin says specifically it may be the Shalom Zachar, and this would be a source in the Gemara for the concept of a Shalom Zachar. Practically speaking, also the Trumas Hadeshin says really in that case it could take place any night of the week. Practically speaking, we do it on Friday night because everybody's home and everybody's available. That Amar brings it in Shulchan Aruch. I mean, there are other reasons that are brought in Sfarim why a Shalom Zachar should be Davka Friday night. For one thing, because the Medrash says a baby always has to experience Shabbos before he has a Bris Milah. That's one reason why the Bris Milah is on the eighth day. The Medrash gives a mashal on it, like he has to first greet the queen before he can, yeah. So there are deeper reasons why Shalom Zachar takes place on Shabbos. The Marshal, by the way, the Marshal has a pirush and a comprehensive pirush on Baba Kama called Yam Shal Shloima. And in this connection over here, he goes into a bit of an arichos about the various kinds of sudas that we make in Jewish life, which ones are considered a sudas mitzvah or not. Because the Gemara mentions elsewhere that Rav wouldn't go to a sudas arishus. Rav would only attend a sudas mitzvah. So if he's going to Shavua HaBen or Yeshua HaBen, however we define it, it must be that it was a Sudas Mitzvah. So if we're going to say, like, if we're going to say, like, the Trumas Adeshin, that it was a Shalom Zachar, that implies that a Shalom Zachar is considered a Sudas Mitzvah. And he goes through Barichos and talks about a few different kinds of Sudas. Is a Pidyon HaBen, in fact, considered a Sudas Mitzvah? What about, he talks about a Bar Mitzvah. Is that considered a Sudas? He says on the face of it, yes, a Bar Mitzvah, the very name implies that you're celebrating a Mitzvah. But he says, listen, you know, if you have Divrei Torah and things like that over there, then you can call it a Sudas Mitzvah, but in and of itself, maybe Lav Dafka. He mentions, by the way, a bit of a funny thing over there. He says he took the view also, another example of a Sudas Mitzvah, he says, would be a Siyum Masechta. Now, we know, when do we say, and then when we make a mezuman, when do we say Shas Simcha B'Moino? So we say it by a wedding and by a Shavu, we say it by weddings and by Sheva Brachas. Yeshua, that you would also say it by, there's a possibility you would say it by Bris Milah, but Lamai said we don't because there's not such a Simcha because the baby is in pain. But so the Maharshal says that his own opinion is that you should really say it by Siyum Masechta. That's the ultimate Simcha. And he says one time by a Siyum he actually told them to do that, to say Shas Simcha B'Moinai. But he says that there was a whole hullabaloo and everybody started arguing and then it made a whole bunch of problems. And the Maharshal kind of takes responsibility and says, you know what, Im Hayos, it's very logical, but I see that I messed up by trying to insist on such a thing when nobody else did such a thing before. But anyway, he goes interestingly into a number of different types of sudas that we make, which ones are and aren't a sudas mitzvah. Anyway. If a Talmud Chacham is there, then I mean that's just the Talmud Chacham being there in and of itself doesn't make it a sudas mitzvah. But if they're saying Divrei Torah and they're, yeah. I mean, if the Talmud Chacham is there, we hope that he's going to be saying some Divrei Torah, you know. And, yeah. Okay, now. Of these three chachamim, Rav loy ayo kamei de Shmuel. Rav did not want to go in ahead of Shmuel, as the Gemara will explain in a few lines why. Shmuel loy ayo kamei de Rav Asi. Shmuel did not want to go in ahead of Rav Asi because Rav Asi is a Talmud of Rav and he's greater than Shmuel, and Shmuel recognized that. And Rav Asi loy ayo kamei de Rav, and Rav Asi being a Talmud of Rav doesn't want to go in front of Rav. So you have like a stalemate over there. Who's going to go in first and who's going to have to wait outside? Rav Shuda brings the Sinis Igeres and adds another detail as well. He says Shmuel, the Gemara, that we would assume that Shmuel wouldn't go in before Rav either, but he says explicitly his Gisa of the Gemara is exactly that Shmuel wouldn't go in before Rav. So now you really have a stalemate. Who's going to go in first and who's going to wait? Amri, so they discussed among themselves, Man Nitrach, who should wait outside and the other ones will go in. So they decided Nitrach Shmuel will wait outside, Rav and Rav Asi will go in as Rebbe and Talmud, and Shmuel will go in afterwards. So the question is why? V'nesi Rav Rav Asi, so Nitrach Shmuel, V'nesi Rav Rav Asi, Shmuel should wait outside, Rav and Rav Asi will go in, and Shmuel will go in afterwards. So the question is, why do we have to do it that way? V'nitrach Rav or V'nitrach Rav or Rav Asi. Why don't we have Rav or Rav Asi wait, and they'll come in afterwards. And the answer is, the fact that Rav did not want to go in before Shmuel is not really because Rav knew that Shmuel is greater than him. In fact, Rav is much greater than Shmuel. He was older and he was the greater Talmud Chacham. But Rav milsa ba'almahu da'ovad le Shmuel. The reason why is just Rav would try whenever possible to show kavod to Shmuel, mishumahu maisa delatye, because there was a story one time where Rav inadvertently cursed Shmuel. The Gemara tells in Shabbos a story when Rav moved from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. He came down with indigestion or something on the way, and Shmuel realized that's what happened, and he sent one of his talmidim to administer a cure to Rav. But it was a very difficult cure, and Rav didn't realize that this is being done for his benefit. So he said something sharp against whoever's causing me this tsar. And again, as we said, Kishgoga Shiyotzim Lefnei HaShalit, a Talmud Chacham says something and has an effect. So the result was, Rav had said, whoever's doing this to me should not have sons. The result is Shmuel had only daughters. So now when Rav realized what he had done, that he had insulted and accidentally cursed Shmuel, the great Talmud Chacham, from then on, even though Shmuel was a lesser Talmud Chacham than him, he would still try to give him cover. So because of that, Abir Rav Alei, that was why normally Rav would show honor to Shmuel and let him go first. But here, where that would impinge on Rav Asi's covered as well, then therefore there's really no choice, and we have to have Rav and Rav Asi go in first, and Shmuel will go in afterwards. Okay. Anyway, Adahochi Vahochi, as all of this was going on, while they were still discussing what order they should go in, a cat came and then and bit off the hand of the child whose bris or pidyon haben or shalom zachar or whatever it was that they were celebrating. Nofak Rav Darash, so Rav went and gave the following public darasha. Chosel, a dangerous cat, like this one that, that harmed this child, muta lahorgoy, you're allowed to kill it. Tosfos points out, by the way, this is not a new takona that Rav is making on the spot as a result of this story. He's explaining that there's always been this din. Now you should be aware of it. So chosel muta lahorgoy, you're allowed to kill it. Va'osu l'kaima, you're not allowed to keep it. Ve'ein v'mish gezel, there's no issue of stealing if somebody else has a cat and you go, of this, this type of cat, and you go and kill it. You're not guilty of stealing and then harming the other guy's property. And there's no issue of Hashava Saveda, which the Gemara explains, meaning even if you find the cat dead, you're not obligated to return the skin. You can keep the skin of the cat for yourself. The vote is, the Pnei Yeshua explains, the chiddush of that one is, you might think, Mela, you killed it, you removed a dangerous hezek, so fine, then kind of the chachamim reward you by giving you the skin. But if you just find it dead, you didn't have anything to do with it, maybe at least you should have to return the skin to the owner. No, Rav is saying it's not so. The Gemara goes on to explain, it's not even any Yaakov that we're talking about a specific breed of cat, which are habitually dangerous. We're not talking about the regular sam cats, like we said before, that people keep around to keep mice away. Continuing on this topic of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says that here's another din. We're going to bring three dinim, of which the third one of them has to do with Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says Amar Rav Abba bar Papa, Mishum Rav Acha bar Papa, Mishum Rav Chanina bar Papa. The Gemara, actually, the actual Gemara, if you look at it on Peyom and Beis, actually has a bunch of different versions of who the Chachamim were involved with this, and it actually has a siman over there for using the middle letters of their names. One word of the siman is Chabad. Chabad biyach bichan siman is how the Gemara says over there, because one version of it is, it's of Acha bar Abba bar Adda, or not bar, but Mishum. Of Acha, Mishum Rav Abba, Mishum Rav Adda. Anyway, number one, Masriyin al Chikuch b'Shabbos. If there's an epidemic of scratching disease that people have some kind of skin inflammation, which is causing widespread that's a widespread thing that people are scratching and itching, you can be Masriyin about it on Shabbos. Rashi explains it means they would be davening to Hashem to get rid of it, and even blow shofar and chatzotzeris. Tosfos objects and says that it's not blowing shofar and things like that. Just means that, for example, you would say Anenu. B'chal, you have it in the Masechta Tainis. It talks about, like, you know, when there's no rain, then there are fasts and tefillas and Anenu and so forth. But the Gemara of the Mishnah explains over there in Perek Gimel of Tainis that it's not only that. Other kinds of tzoris that affect the tzibur as well are things for which you would say Anenu and sometimes even blow shofar if it's not Shabbos and different things like that. And have fast days. So one of them is Rab Abba Bar Papa, this whole chain of Chachamim, want us to know that Chikuch, a disease that's causing people to be scratching and their skin, some kind of skin inflammation, is there some kind of contagious disease like that, is enough to be doing that even on Shabbos.
So you
it could mean, but Rashi, but then there'd be no chiddush in it. You can say, of course, you can say kapitel tilim on Shabbos. So, right. So Rashi explains it means b'tzibur, b'tchino, b'shoifrus, b'chatzoitzus. Right, Tosfos is saying the Chatzotzos and Shofar, no. It would just mean that they're saying Anenu. You wouldn't normally say Anenu on Shabbos, but here you could do that. That's number one. Number two, the Delas Hanin Elas Logim Heira Tiposeach. A door that was closed will not be opened soon. Meaning, in other words, if a person was thinking to be able to accomplish something and the door was closed in front of him, Minashamayim, it's not going to be open so soon. He's going to have to put in a lot of extra davening and beg for a lot of extra rachamim for that door, for that opportunity to reopen. And number three, v'halakeach bayis be'Eretz Yisrael, if a person buys a house in Eretz Yisrael from a goy, kosvin olav oinoy, you can write a document, a bill of sale, afilo b'Shabbos, even on Shabbos, mishum yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara ends up explaining in a few lines, I mean, a yid can't write it. It means you can have a goy write it. We don't apply a mirla akum over there. So this third din has to do with, obviously has to do with yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Maratz Chayis points out there is kind of a connection between all these three things. It means you have to grab the opportunity when it's available because it may get away. The chikuch over here, for example, it might be right now, it happens on Shabbos, is an eis rotzen, when if you daven and blow shofar or say anenu or whatever, the Eibishter will listen and get rid of this disease. Mashenkin, afterwards, you may miss that window of opportunity. The delos on in elos is obviously the opportunity might slip away, and he explains. The Gemara is going to mention in a few lines that a specific example of that was when they were going to appoint Rav Achami Difti as Rosh Hashiva, and in the end, Marv Rav Ashi came to town. It's a story in Baba Basra, and they ended up getting, and he ended up becoming the new, he ended up being appointed the new Rosh Hashiva. Now, the Maratz Chayus explains, based on, you find in Igeres Rav Shura Goin, at this time, the king of Persia, who also ruled over Babel, was a big anti-Semite. Not long after that, he actually outlawed keeping Shabbos, and the Chacham had to daven that he should be removed, and in the end, a huge snake came and then swallowed him up and killed him, and that was the end of his Gzera. The point is, Maratz Chayus says, this was an example of, the Chachamim couldn't afford to, now that we appointed Marv Rav Ashi, fine, we're going to sit down and discuss again, should we keep him, or should we put Rav Achami Difti in? It's an emergency situation, we don't necessarily have the time to deal with such things, under such conditions, we're going to have to leave well enough alone. So all these three things are examples where you have only a short window of opportunity to accomplish something, and you better do it right away. So the Gemara says, Mason. Basically, you don't procrastinate, yeah. So the Gemara says, Macy, I have a contradiction on that point about the scratching disease. So the Braisa says in the Septa Tainus, when we're talking about the various things for which we fast or blow shofar or say anenu, etc. So Ushar Peronius and Misagius of Oisalatzibur, other kinds of punishments that are threatening and coming upon the tzibur, could go in chikuch, for example, a scratching disease like that, a type of shtin, chagov, or locusts, zvuv, or flies that are bothering people, tsira, hornets, the yatush, or mosquitoes, the shiluach nechoshim v'akrabim, or an infestation of snakes or scorpions, loy hoyu masriin, for all those things, we're not masriin, blowing shofar, or saying anenu, elak soyakim. All we do is we cry out to the Eibishter, the yachid, and ask for the Eibishter to have rachmanis. So what are you telling me over here, that for chikuch, we do masriin, we do daven, and even according to Rashi, blow shofar with sibur, and even on Shabbos? So the answer is like kasha, can be lach, can be yobish. It depends what kind of skin inflammations we're talking about, whether it's moist or dry. If it's moist, then it's not so bad. It's something, it's bad, it's uncomfortable, but it's not so dangerous, and therefore you don't have to go start having public tefillas b'tzibur about it. Can be yovish, as opposed to when it's dry, then that's much worse. D'om Rebbe Shurban Levi, as Rebbe Shurban Levi says about the Shchin and Mitzrayim, Shchin Shehevi HaKadosh Baruch Hu al Mitzrayim, lach mi b'chutz v'yovish mi b'fnim. It was moist on the outside and dry on the inside, under the skin. Shenemash v'hi Shchin HaVabur is Pereach Ba'odim V'abahema. As the Pasuk says, it was a shin of blisters popping out forth on man and beast. So in other words, the implication is, when it came above the surface of the skin, it was mevabea, it was bubbling and blistering, meaning that it was moist. And now if it was moist on the inside as well, first of all, the Pasuk wouldn't describe that, it's only perea. It would have described that it would describe this avah boys above, below the skin as well. So the implication is below the skin it was dry, and then when it comes out to the surface it's moist. That's the worst of all, because then you have any kind of treatment. The Gemara explains elsewhere you could have a treatment that's good for dry shchin, which aggravates moist shchin, and vice versa. Here they had both, so they couldn't get any relief during the week that the maka was going. But the point is, we see that the dry kind is worse than the moist kind. So therefore, that's the kind that Masriyan, that we would actually cry out publicly and even blow shofar or say anenu or whatever on Shabbos for it. Okay. We said videlos anin elos levim hera tipotzeach. We said when there's a door that was closed won't be opened so quickly. Maihi, what do we mean by that? Mazutra omas smicha. Mazutra says it means if a chacham is supposed to get smicha and then the opportunity passes by. We have a couple of examples in the Gemara. There's an example in Bava Metzia, for example, where Rebbe wanted to give Shmuel smicha and he wasn't able to gather the chachamim, or there was some other reason, and therefore the opportunity ended up slipping away. And there's other examples of that in Shas, where a chacham was supposed to be getting, we don't mean the smicha we have nowadays, we mean the original kind, ish mipiish, from Moshe Rabbeinu, and where the opportunity was missed, and they never managed to have such an opportunity again with that particular chacham. About who?
I think
Rabbi Yaakov ibn Chaviv, the author of Ein Yaakov, yeah. No, that was his son, that Abach was against the reestablishment of smicha. When Rabbi Yaakov Deirav tried to reestablish smicha, the Abach, Rabbi Levi ben Chaviv, the Rav of the son of Rabbi Yaakov ben Chaviv, the Rav of Yerushalayim, was against it. Yeah, was one of the ones against it. But advised there were a number of chacham of that time that were against it. Yeah. Anyway, but here we're talking about when they originally had the smicha. If the opportunity is lost, then it's missed. Rav Ashi Omar, Rav Ashi says another meaning of it is kolam riyim loy, when the Eibishta treats a person badly, loy b'mehera metivin loy. He won't so quickly be treated well again. In other words, the idea is, like Rashi says, you need to daven for extra rachmi. Rav Achami Difti Omar lo'olamen metivin loy. Rav Achami Difti says not just that loy b'mehera, he'll never be shown good again. But the loy he, the Gemara says, that's not really so. It's not an irrevocable thing that it'll never. Rav Achami Difti milsa denafshe hudakamar hudama. He's talking about his own personal experience where, again, he was on the verge of being appointed the Rosh Hashiva, the new Rosh Hashiva of Mosse Machasya, and instead the position went to Ma'ar Rav Ashi. So Tosfos explains, originally Rav Achami Difti thought that maybe the Chachamim will rethink it and appoint him after all. So that's why originally he said in the Gemara in Bava Basra, he actually also says loy b'mehera metivin loy. But when he realized time passed and they're not reconsidering it, maybe because, like Maharat Chayyus says, what they were dealing with at the time with an anti-Semitic government, they didn't have the opportunity to sort of acha rethought it and said, you know what, lo'olam metivin loy. Maharat Chayyus says that actually specifically. I mean, we often find the Chachamim would try to run away from Srara, from a high position. But here what it is Rav Ashi and Rav Achami Difti mean when the person actually feels bad about it and considers it, Mirian Loi, then Loi B'mheiro L'Olam Ein Mativin Loi. If he feels, you know what, okay, I didn't get it, it's Min HaShemayim, that's how it is, and he doesn't feel bad about it, well then it's not Mirian Loi, then Taka maybe Mativin Loi afterward. But here, when he Taka feels bad about it, then that's when we're saying that door is going to take a lot of extra rachamim for that door to reopen. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola, Dalad Cheshvan. So the Rebbe was talking about in a Fabrengen about, as usual, at a Fabrengen, we have to accept achlotas tovus to increase in all areas of Torah and mitzvahs, especially achlotas atorah vayadus and achlotas amayonas chutza. Now, we often say, before we make achlota, if chas v'shalom, Mashiach will be delayed, then such and such. Because, after all, achakaloi, we're expecting that Mashiach will come today. So therefore, specifically, when we make achlota, and it has to do with something that we do with Zman HaGolus, then we'll add that phrase, if chas v'shalom, Mashiach is delayed. Okay, continuing with Hilchos Hashkamas HaBoker from the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch. So we were talking about saying Moda'ani in the morning. The reason why you can say it even before you washed is there's none of the Shiva Shemus Shainim Nimchakim, none of the names of the Eibishter that are, so to speak, personal names that can't be erased. Therefore, a person can say it before he washed his hands, and even if he's not wearing pajamas, even if he may have touched covered parts of his body, there's no problem with it. He wouldn't be allowed to say Divrei Torah with unclean hands. For that, he has to wash Negelvaster. But here we're talking about Moda'ani is not considered like that because it doesn't have the Shemus Shainim Nimchakim. Makes a long arichus about it, and in Kuntus and Yonah Shalteres Achsidus, the idea that there's nothing in the world can be metame the Moda'ani of a year, then it ever goes over there by arichus about what Moda'ani represents as far as the etzim and neshama of a year. Anyway, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say you could think Divrei Torah when your hands are not clean before you wash them. Nevertheless, you shouldn't be speaking or even thinking Divrei Torah while you're lying in bed, even if you wash your hands, get up. Or sit be'ema, hikun l'krasa l'kecha Yisrael, prepare yourself to greet Hashem, and then you can be saying, words, and then you can be saying concepts of Torah. As long as once you wash your hands, he's saying, wash your hands, sit up in bed, and then you're sitting be'ema over yira, then you can start saying Givar and Shabbat Yosha.